Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Text line again 0240971087. The Ghanaian economy is in a healthy or bad state, depending on who you talk to. The differing responses from government communicators and opposition figures have succeeded in heightening confusion in the minds of most Ghanaians. The latest assessment of the economy came from the TUC, which believes the economy is not in good health, probably because failed economic policies of the past are being recycled and needed to be jettisoned. Finance Minister Setepe holds a contrasting view. To government, an economy which grew by 6.7% in the first quarter of last year and given a clean bill of health by the international community cannot be said to be in the last chance salon. If there is any problem with the economy at all, it may be attributed to the spiraling wage bill in the public sector. But is that the case? Mr. Setepe has joined us on the line. Good evening, Mr. Setepe, and you are welcome.
Good evening and good evening to your listeners. I'm afraid the line is very blurred.
All right. You have been finance minister for almost 6 months, and if you are to assess Ghana's economy in its current state, would you say it is the best, as some analysts say, or poor, as other experts also believe, or is there room for improvement?
I'm afraid the line is blurred. I can barely hear you. There's so much noise in the background.
All right. I believe we have to call you back again. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. We are also live on Obonu FM 96.5 in Tema, Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Twin City 94.7 in Takoradi, and Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodi. We are still trying to get in touch with the finance minister, but first let's go to Mercy for some stories.
President John Dramani Mahama has reminded ministers and deputy ministers on the need to acquaint themselves with their roles and deliver in line with government's vision. President Mahama was opening a retreat session for deputy ministers, as well as the launch of a code of conduct for ministers and political appointees at Pidwasi Lodge in the Eastern Region. The 30-page code of ethics is to assist ministers, deputy ministers and political appointees to perform their duties in a transparent, accountable and ethical manner.
Thanks, Mercy, and we understand that the minister is back on the line. Welcome back, Mr. Tepen. Can you hear me clearly now?
Yeah, better now.
All right. I would say that you have been finance minister for almost 6 months, and if you are to assess Ghana's economy in its current state, would you say it is the best, as some analysts say, or poor, as other experts also believe, or is there room for improvement?
Yeah, thank you very much and good evening to your listeners. There is always room for improvement even when you have the strongest economy and even when you are doing well. I think that I say this against the background of the global financial crisis, where countries, you know, which were known to be quite solid and nobody expected, you know, that they would have difficulties, have been suffering since 2008, and many of them are still having difficulties. We all know, for example, that the U.S., even the mighty U.S., has had difficulties, and it is just picking up. We all know that China is pulling. So in the management of an economy, the fact that you have problems or you have some difficulties does not necessarily mean that, you know, things have become so terrible, you know, as some people are describing. Let me also mention that some of the difficulties we are having now, for example, against the background of gold, cocoa prices going down, in the past would have devastated the economy. We have additional resources by way of petroleum, you know, products, which has helped to stabilize the economy. We said in presenting the 2013 budget that there were certain overruns which government was going to tackle. We identified them specifically to be the shortfall in the corporate income tax, particularly from the petroleum sector. That was our first year, full year of exporting petroleum, and there were some overestimation of the revenue based on the lack of experience. We spoke about subsidies. We spoke about the wage. And we spoke about, you know, other factors, grants. Government started tackling the challenges. The subsidies have been adjusted. We are left with the utilities. We have been recently introducing additional measures. And many of those who decried or did not have any confidence in the measures that were put into practice last year are again being skeptical about the measures that we are putting in place. So I would say that, in short, the fundamentals of our economy are strong, but we do have some challenges. Notable at this point in time is the wage bill that has increased, which has resulted in an imbalance in the budget, and which we said we want to realign. The fact that you have difficulties and you want to take corrective action does not mean that, you know, you have lost hope or nothing can be done.
But then the question that many would ask, you said there are challenges though. Is there any problem with the economy at all?
Of course, that's what I said. We were explicit. We were quite explicit in presenting the 2013 budget. And those were the things I itemized. We said that, in particular, let me repeat again, that there were difficulties as a result of not adjusting the subsidy on petroleum and utilities regularly. We said that because we didn't have much experience in estimating the petroleum prices during the first full year when we started exporting. We said that we had difficulties. The revenue was overestimated. Luckily, we did a correction. We also said that, you know, we have not got as much grants from our development partners. We itemized about 7 items which accounted for the excess and the deficit of 12%. So we were quite open with this, and these are the ones that we are tackling. So we never said that the economy did not have a problem. We identify the problems and we are tackling them.
Well, I'm sure you've read the TEC's position on the Ghanaian economy as it calls for failed economic programs to be jettisoned. Is it a vote of no confidence?
We are at a point, a very delicate point of negotiating with the TEC. And particularly on the matter of wages, which we have identified as one of the factors that is leading to the public sector wage, leading to the misalignment. Are they suggesting that the single spine is one of those measures that should be jettisoned? I don't think so. I think that what we are saying is that the single spine, for example, as one of the policies that they may have inferred, I don't know, I don't think that it was stated explicitly looking at their statement. You know, we have said that it has its strength. It has stopped, you know, the rate at which we were losing, you know, our doctors, we were losing our teachers and everybody. But the fact that it has led to some challenges, I don't think calls for its complete jettisoning, if that is what TEC is saying. I don't know which other policies, you know, they are talking about. We did, for example, introduce the petroleum revenue management bill, which Parliament passed into law to regulate the way the new resources will be managed. We have been submitting reports regularly. We've submitted the first full-year report to Parliament, which is going to debate. Is that the policy that the CEC is asking us to get in? So I would wish that they will be more specific with which policy we have to get in, you know, in the last few years. These are two examples, you know, of policies that we have implemented. One has difficulties. The other one has been, you know, acclaimed globally as a good framework for us to account for the natural resources from the petroleum sector.
So are you saying that you don't know these past economic policies that you've been pursuing that TUC thinks you should abandon?
I just gave you two examples of the key policies that, you know, we implemented in the last 4 years. And so that's what I'm wondering, you know, which policies specific, and I gave reasons why I don't think that, you know, they should be jettisoned, even if you're having difficulty, you know, with some of them. So, as I said, we are engaging, we've been engaging the TUC, and I believe that, you know, with time we will get to understand, you know, their collective perspective.
Well, the Ghana TUC, which issued a statement on the economy asking government to jettison failed economic programs, unfortunately declined to take part in this discussion. But moving on, we will again go back to the single spine. But the retreat that you held at the weekend, was the team satisfied with the current GDP growth rates alongside inflationary figures for the year?
We are just emerging from the dry season. We just adjusted, you know, petroleum prices. Usually during the dry season, we all know that food prices go up. That is when the food index in the inflation also goes up. When we adjust petroleum prices to correct, you know, it normally shifts into prices. So there are reasons why inflation has inched up. The rains, fortunately, seems to be good in the south. If they continue across the country, we were, as normally happens, we would have a good harvest, and we believe that the inflation rate, you know, would be moderated. Secondly, we have been introducing, you know, we spoke about the GDP rate. Yes, we are satisfied with the performance as far as the growth is concerned, despite the challenges that industry has been having. And I heard, you know, the president of the ACI this morning, I believe on your video, enumerating the challenges our industry has been having as a result of the power crisis from last year. That is been coming to an end with the Nigerian gas coming on stream, hopefully, with our own gas plants. And so, despite these challenges, to have performed in the first quarter 6.7%. on a GDP base that has doubled in the last, you know, 4 years, I would say it's something which Ghanaians as a whole must be proud of. That is not to say that we do not have challenges in other sectors. As I said, we would always have challenges in managing the economy. But I think that so far, as far as the GDP and inflation rates are concerned, we are watching particularly the inflation trend. But we are also satisfied with where we are.
Well, Mr. Tewede, there has been a constant mentioning of the spiraling wage bill, which continues to erode economic gains, and I'm sure it's as a result of the single spine implementation. But does the solution lie in increased taxes and the new taxes recently approved by Parliament?
With the taxes we introduce have what we call sunset clauses. That is to say that we are not introducing them permanently. And I believe that this is a better approach to managing an economy, in the sense that when you have challenges, you can use certain instruments at your disposal to tackle those challenges. That doesn't mean that you should then make them permanent. And so you will see that from 2009, we have been doing this. You know, when the previous administration, for example, eliminated the prices of on foodstuffs, particularly rice and other imports, basic commodity imports, we restored them because we saw them as temporary, as a result of which domestic rice prices have gone up. Then we introduced the fiscal stabilization levy, and immediately the situation started improving. We eliminated them, as did the previous administration anyway. And so if we do have challenges now, we are saying that we do not want to impose permanent forms of taxation on Ghanaians on the one hand. On the other hand, we do not also want to be inactive in tackling the problems so that they fester and they become, you know, more difficult. So we believe that adopting temporary approaches to difficulties and then reversing them once the economy stabilizes is the best way forward. Because then you do not make the problem, you know, last, and you also find correct measures And yes, it imposes, may impose some temporary difficulties, but compared to the difficulties that it otherwise has imposed, that I would believe is a good alternative.
Well, I'll come back to you, Mr. Asetepe, but let's bring economic expert and executive director of the Center for Policy Analysis, Dr. Joe Abe, into the discussion. Good evening, Doc, and you're welcome.
Good evening.
Well, you have been listening to the finance minister. Is the economy going well or not, looking at all the economic indicators?
Well, in terms of growth, I think the Ghanaian economy is acknowledged to have been doing quite well, even the non-oil sector. What happened is this, though, that the economy has slowed down from an annualized growth rate of about 8%. For 2012, to based on the first quarter data, we estimate at SEPA that optimistically, if we don't solve our problems, then optimistically, this year would go down from this 8% to about 7.2%. Now, but that's why I said optimistically. I think that where our minds should go is that one of the primary reasons that has been given for the loss of business confidence and the slowing down of the economy, which is also why the government's revenue projections are being threatened, is the energy problem. And I think, luckily for Ghana, we do this.
Hello, Doc, could you reposition yourself? Well, we could hardly hear you.
I'm saying, is this better?
All right, Doc, no. Could you again reposition yourself? Well, it seems we might have to call you back. Now, back to you, Mr. Sekwe. Let's talk about the communication tax bill. Why have you withdrawn it? Is it because of all the noises and disapproval that is being made?
I don't think it's been withdrawn. I don't recollect that. I was not in the country, but I don't recollect that my deputies would do it. As is the practice in Parliament, the Speaker uses his judgment to ask the committee that deals with the issue to look at it again. And that is what is being done. And I believe that we revisit the issue. Let me take the opportunity, as I said this morning, to make, you know, 3 points. First, it is not a new tax. We all know that the communication service tax was imposed in 2008, and it still serves the purpose for which it was imposed. So the misrepresentation that it is a new tax is erroneous. Secondly, the tax was imposed as an excise duty as opposed to a value-added tax type tax. When I say a value-added tax type tax, I mean the way we collect the GET fund and the way we collect the National Health Insurance Levy. The communication service tax was not designed that way. In fact, it was designed as an environmental tax, as if it were an excise. This point was made clear in the 2007 budget, which the late Honorable Banre Edu read in Parliament, that the tax is an excise. However, in crafting the law, there was a problem in dealing with incoming calls from international sources and also the connection between domestic, you know, telecom companies. As a result of which, the levy was imposed in lieu when the Telecoms Act was done. This is the second source of, this is the main source of confusion. So what we sought to do, which is my second point, is simply to state explicitly that the tax as designed was an excise tax, and therefore we want it to be clear that it is an excise tax so that the litigation, including the cost that's ongoing, will be clearer, because the budget policy stated that as such from 2007. As a result of this, we therefore went to Parliament to clarify. It did not take account of the Telecoms Act, and that is why, you know, the Speaker asked that the two laws, the Communication Service Tax and the Telecommunications Act, should be reconciled, you know, so that a report is resubmitted to the House. That we are not imposing a new tax and it was not meant to be one of the levies that was imposed by the import levy or the national stabilization levy.
Well, then, this single spine that with this attendant increased wage bill that government believes is a cause of the many economic problems was hailed by government following its implementation. And let me say, at that time, didn't you know a time will come when it will create problems for the economy?
First, as I said, the rationalization of salaries and allowances in the public service is an ideal. It's something we have been trying to do for a very long time. Through consolidation, that consolidated some allowances. Secondly, through the Ghana Universal Salary Scheme, which was implemented around 2006, which led to the Health Universal Salary Scheme, or HUSS, around 2007-2008. And by 2007-2008, a further attempt was made through the single spine policy, which implemented in 2009. So like tax policies and other policy measures, you keep introducing measures to improve the economic, particular economic situation. So the fact that you are having difficulties does not mean that the tax is a bad one. The second element points out that we are not just reading the alert. You would recall that even in the heat of the election debate, His Excellency, the then President and now President Mahama said in the debate that the single spine implementation was beginning to pose a challenge to the economic management. So the concession that we're having challenges to the economy would be no stop now. He mentioned it again in the State of the Nation address. And remember that we are still migrating workers onto the single spine, which migration is expected to end this year. And we all know the pressures that come with the with a single spine implementation. We were in this country when, as recently as 2-3 months ago, the test was on strike, demanding their test, with patients dying and with school children, examinations stressing, everybody asked for some consensus. So the point we are making is that, and the citizens have asked for a forum to be held, and that forum will be held. For all of us to evaluate something that is good, which is resulting in some difficulty. We are a country that has moved from spending about 25-30% of revenue on salary to about 60%. Mm. This is what we are seeing is not sustainable and which needs to be reduced.
All right, Mr. Tekla, I'll ask you to hold the line again for us. Dr. Joe Abbey has joined us again. Good evening, Dr. and welcome back.
Good evening. I hope this is better this time.
Yes, it's much better. So you were making a point.
Yes, I was saying that luckily for Ghana, we don't have to digest on austerity as the way to bring the deficit down. We have a direct problem that we must face. This is the energy problem. And I think whatever it takes to make sure that we are able to improve the reliability and the adequacy of electric power is the most important thing. If the deficit has to arise because we are solving this problem, it's worth the sacrifice. So that is my first thing. The second thing is this. Whatever we do, these tax proposals will not really make it up if we do not tackle some of the weaknesses in expenditure management. And what I read today in the graphic about the surprise about the window is just not acceptable. We've reached a point where we've given too many explanations for something which seems to be outside of our control. And I think we should leave everything aside, go into. We said we're going to do a payroll audit. What happened to it? We said we're doing biometric registration. I think there is nothing that is too much for this country to be able to really commission a thorough investigation about what is it that is driving this public sector withdrawal. What is emerging from the data that I saw in the graphic today is plainly not acceptable. It means that we're going to get a wage bill for this year, which will be even bigger as ratio to GDP than what last year.
Well, Doc, but then the question comes in, well, Ghanaians, well, it appears we lost Dr. Joe Abi there on the line, and I believe Mr. Setepa is still on the line. Hello?
Yes, I am still on the line.
Yeah, you heard the submissions of Dr. Joe Abi. What do you make of them?
Well, he made a point on power. I think I made that point already when you asked about the GDP.
Yeah.
And I said, despite the challenges we were having with power, if you recollect, I said that the growth for the first quarter at 6.7 could have been worse. You know, so I did consider, I did say that work was ongoing to resolve the energy crisis, some of which was beyond our control. We did not know, for example, that a ship, you know, would damage the pipeline and then we wouldn't be getting gas from Nigeria. That situation, as the Minister for Energy said, hopefully, is being rectified. Dr. Joabi mentioned the biometric registration, and he also mentioned the need for payroll audit. I wish to assure him that it is that interrogation and audit that is resulting in the numbers that he's talking about. We have started them in earnest, and we have been going deep into, you know, the form of payments, the number of employees that are employed, you know, by each, you know, agency, and it is some of these. So the numbers coming out are not just numbers that, you know, we pick from the, you know, annual. As we speak now, we know the nature of allowances that are paid. We know the source of those allowances. We know the impact of the stimulus plan on each agency. We know the impact of the premium, you know, which is being paid. We know the impact of us. So we have been doing exactly what Dr. you know, Abi, you know, required. And I believe that when the forum is held, you know, we will be discussing. We have already, as we did today, brought out some of those numbers. And it wasn't to spite anybody, no, just to make the facts, you know, there so that we can all find a solution, you know, to them. So I wish to assure Dr. Abi that we are doing precisely that.
All right, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. Setepa is the finance minister, and Dr. Joe Abi is back on the line. We are sorry for that again, Doc.
Well, as I said, I'm glad about what the minister just said, and I think that this is something for our total public education. And if there's nothing that has gone wrong, I'm saying that if I look at the data that the graphic published this morning, it means that you're looking at a public sector window of more than 8.6 billion, which is something like 9.3-9.4% of total national income. This is something that, if that is the case, then I'm saying to the minister and I'm saying to Ghanaians that it means the budget deficit, even if we got all the tax proposals in place, the budget deficit for 2013 is threatened to be more like 11%, not 9%. And this is something that we must brace ourselves for. I was also told about this call by the union. I think this is another challenge that we must take very seriously, because we need the total cooperation of labor as well as of the business community if we're going to deal with the problems about management of the public. Yes.
But, Doc, while Ghanaians think things are hard and the economy is not doing too well, the international community rates Ghana's economy very high. Why this confusion?
Well, I don't think that there's much of a confusion, actually. And this is the problem. The PUC is something on the table. Look, what is happening is this, and this is something which is going to be an Africa-wide problem. We cannot have growth which is powered by exploitation of Africa's natural resources, be it timber, be it gold, or be it copper, which is so capital intensive that the benefits of this exploitation do not accrue to the people. This is the problem that we are having. We are three people coming in.
Well, unfortunately, we lost Dr. Joe Abi again. Dr. Joe Abi is the executive director of the Center for Policy Analysis. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. We are also live on Ubonu FM 96.5 in Tema, Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, and Twin City 94.7 in Takrade. Our text line again is 0240-971087. Public officers have a charge to keep and a country to serve, but this trust would henceforth be put under critical examination following the launch of a code of ethics by the president on the conduct of his appointees. This move, as spelled out, is supposed to guide these appointees on the do's and don'ts in the discharge of their mandate. So what is the book going to achieve, and what measures are contained in it? We speak to Phyllis Kwachi Fosu, a Deputy Minister of Information, to give us answers. But first, let's listen to the President as he talks about the thrust of the code and the responsibilities of the Ministers of State and all political appointees.
The Code of Ethics for Ministers and Political Appointees reflects government's vision to maintain a clean government imbued with systems and clear procedures and guidelines for performance and delivery. This Code of Ethics must be seen as a strong prima facie reason to err on the side of caution, especially in situations of ethical conflict. This manual is the first edition of our commitment to high moral, ethical, and delivery standards. It bears my utmost convictions and honors responsibilities as president to lead and carry all of you along with me in this solemn oath to uphold the public interest over all other considerations. This must therefore be seen as an expression of my abhorrence of unacceptable behavior by government officials and indeed amongst the generality of our population. As president, my view is that corruption must be prosecuted when detected. But first and foremost, we must prioritize prevention of corruption. We must put the systems in place that prevent people from acting in a corrupt manner, or that when they have acted in such manner, they are promptly identified and dealt with. One of the most important ways to prevent unacceptable conduct and abuse of office by public officials is to demarcate the ethical boundaries within which the actions, inactions, and decisions taken by any of us can be deemed to be acceptable or unacceptable. The primary purpose of this Code of Ethics is to assist all of you political appointees, including ministers and deputy ministers, to understand and anticipate areas of conflict of interest, self-dealing, bribery, and inappropriate actions in the performance of your duties and to prevent them. Ladies and gentlemen, in our context where traditional norms are in competition with legal, rational norms, clear codes of conduct for all political appointees, such as the one we are launching today, is very necessary. This code of ethics is to eliminate as much as possible the ambiguities and uncertainties that lie at the foreground of decision making by public officials. As president, I'm fully committed to delivering an efficient administration and therefore recognize the need to reduce potential lines of uncertainties for effective functioning of your ministries, departments, and agencies.
Well, that was President John Mahama, the launch of the Code of Ethics for Ministers of State and all political appointees at Ebury today. We are still trying to get in touch with Phyllis Kwachi Fosu, who is the Deputy Minister of Information, but we are joined on the line by former Commissioner for Human Rights and Administrative Justice, Shrad Emil Short. Good evening, Mr. Short, and you are welcome.
Good evening.
Well, a code of ethics for political appointees, is it new?
Well, Shraj came out with guidelines, generic guidelines, so code of conduct, so code of ethics. And institutions were required to come up with code of ethics for their institutions, which are particularly, you know, germane to a particular institution. It is commendable, you know, that, you know, the president has launched this code of ethics. And it would, of course, give guidance to political appointees and clarify certain gray areas, you know, especially areas of conflict of interest, the areas of gifts, you know, versus corruption, and so on. And I especially the conflict of interest situation, which is quite a gray area. And so it is a step in the right direction. But of course, what is important is enforcement of the code, because I don't know, you know, what the president said about who's responsible or what institution is responsible for enforcing the code, and whether the code will be enforced strictly or not. You know, in Ghana here, we are very good at passing legislation, regulations, bylaws, you know, and codes, but enforcement has been our biggest problem. And so I would hope that, you know, the enforcement will be taken very seriously.
Talking about enforcement, since the code did not actually spell out penalty for these public officials who misconduct themselves, would you say it would not live up to its billing?
Well, I haven't seen the code of ethics, so I hesitate to comment on that. But I think there must be some mechanism for enforcement, so that it gives guidance to, you know, to political appointees as to what they should expect if they flout, you know, the code of ethics. There must be some sanction for flouting the code of ethics, and there must be a body or mechanism that is responsible for monitoring, you know, compliance with the code of ethics, and if there is non-compliance, for visiting sanctions on whoever flouts the code of ethics.
But looking at this code of ethics, can we say it's a panacea to corruption and misdeeds by public officials?
Can you say what?
Is the panacea, is the answer to corruption and misdeeds by public officials?
Well, it is not the solution. I mean, we have laws on corruption, and I would recall, we should recall that, you know, an anti-corruption plan, you know, to combat corruption has been lodged with Parliament. It was given to the president when he was vice president 2 years ago, and I understand he handed it over to Parliament. And it's unfortunate that nothing has been done about it. It should have been debated by the parliamentary committee responsible and then adopted as a national policy document and then enforced. But there hasn't been any action on it. So, as I said in the beginning, what is important is not just the passing of these legislation and, you know, formulation of document codes of ethics, but what is important in the final analysis is the effective enforcement of these laws, rules, regulations, and codes of conduct.
Well, now let's talk about public involvement. Is public involvement in checking these appointees not going to be left out since the contents of such codes are not known to them?
Well, the contents of the code should be made public. The media has a responsibility to publicize, you know, the provisions of the code of ethics, and I think the government itself should make the code of ethics widely available and accessible, and should encourage the public to lodge complaints in any situation where the code of ethics has been violated by any political appointee. So yes, the public has to be very much involved in its enforcement. The media has to be involved. But as I said, it is important that there is a mechanism, a body that the public can lodge a complaint with, and there should be sanctions, you know, which can be imposed by that body for violation of the code of ethics.
Now, let me read some of the portions of the code, especially Section 142, which says managing conflicts of interests. And A says that where a minister has a conflict of interest that arises in the general decision-making context, example at a meeting of cabinet or a cabinet meeting, but the minister does not have a minister's responsibility for the issue, a declaration of interest would generally be sufficient. Having declared the interest, the minister should either withdraw from the discussion or seek the agreement of his or her colleagues to continue to take part. The declaration of interest will be recorded. Withdrawal from a cabinet or cabinet committee discussion on the grounds of conflict of interest does not absolve a minister from collective responsibility for any decision resulting from that discussion. And then we have C that says, where a conflict of interest is significant and pervasive, the minister may need to divest himself or herself of the interest by disassociating himself or herself completely from it. And then when you come to D, it says, a minister with complicated or extensive shareholdings is strongly advised or encouraged to consider placing his or her investments into a blind trust as a precaution against unintended conflicts of interest. And where a conflict of interest arises from association with a non-governmental organization, the minister may need to resign from that organization. What is your opinion on these statements on managing conflict of interests?
Well, obviously, one has to study very closely these propositions. I cannot give you my opinion just from what you have read. I would need to have a copy of the document and study this provision very, you know, critically and see what the implications are, whether they are sufficiently, you know, they are sufficiently well formulated to ensure that the public interest is protected. I would rather wait and, you know, have a copy of the code and study the provisions very carefully to be able to answer your question.
But then, in your opinion, what sanctions should be meted out to those who misconduct themselves?
Well, it depends on the gravity of the conflict. It depends on the gravity of the violation. You know, so it could range from a warning or a fine to, you know, dismissal, suspension. There's a whole range of sanctions that can be imposed, but it will all depend on the nature of the violation, the gravity of the violation. And so that is a matter which has to be decided on a case-by-case basis by the body that is responsible for monitoring and implementing the provisions of the Code of Ethics.
All right, I want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight.
Most welcome.
Emil Short is a former commissioner for the Human Rights and Administrative Justice, Shiraj, and Dr. Bosman Asare is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana, Legon, and he's just joined us on the line. Good evening, Dr. Khan. You are welcome.
Good evening to you and to your listeners.
Well, Doc, for the first time in the political administration of the country, the government has introduced ministers of state and all political appointees to a code of ethics. What is your assessment of this measure?
Well, I think, to be fair and objective, this is a step in the right direction. Because as a developing country, we are facing a number of challenges, a number of policy, economic problems. The problems are just numerous. So I think that any effort by the leadership of the country to ensure that those who have been appointed, those who have been entrusted with the management of the public sector, they do their work effectively, efficiently, we get value for money, I think it's a step in the right
direction. But there are those who argue that it's a different thing having such a document and another thing ensuring its implementation. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I think I certainly agree with people who make such assertion, because we really have very good laws, good policies, we have a whole lot of good things out there, but the problem normally comes down to implementation. We don't know whether this is going to be very different or it's not going to be politics as usual, where leaders will say we are going to do A, B, and C, it will turn out that they are not going to do anything new. So let's expect it's too early to conclude that it's not going to work. Suggest we said that he thinks that this is the right way to do the right thing to do. I think we should give him a brief and let's expect that this thing is done for the good people of the country.
But then the question again being asked is who is going to be the gatekeeper to ensure this?
No, the one of the main challenges we face in our economy, especially when it comes to the leadership, is that, you know, usually those who are appointed as ministers, they form a clique, or if you like, a caucus, people who believe that they must get a share, they must get something from serving as ministers of state. They hardly do they see it as a purely public enterprise. And we know that in our system, it's not only the ministers, you can even have some senior people, like let's say the president or the vice, people who are very close, and all of them, they want their share. So I'm thinking that by introducing a document like this, civil society will have a look at it, they will study it, the media will study it. So whenever people's behavior deviates from the document, people will be able to point that out. So broadly, I think that we expect the president to be able to crack the whip. We expect the vice president to be able to crack the whip. We expect even the party in government, their supporters, to be able to point people out that based on the code of conduct, based on what you are supposed to do, that is not what is being done. So I think that if all Ghanaians will really be alert and all of us will be voicing our opinions, we'll make sure that those who have been appointed, well, let's bear in mind that these are supposed to be senior public servants, and I don't see why a senior public servant would like to take away from the society. So we must make sure that all of us ensure that the code of conduct really does what is expected.
Again, mentioning cracking of the whip, are political leaders really going to have the will to sanction the appointees and colleagues who fall short of the code of ethics?
No, another challenge has to do with it. Usually within, let's say, those who are ministers, whenever one does something very wrong, they will even find it difficult exposing the person. The president will find it difficult because when these things come out, it becomes a disgrace to the president or the party in power. I mean, when people are doing the wrong things, as a society, as a country, we tend to even shield some of these individuals. So I think this is going to be very problematic. But I think that we must look at the big picture. And the big picture is that we are facing a lot of economic challenges as a country. There are many things that do not seem to work very well. When you look at the people we appoint as ministers to very sensitive positions, after 4 years, they see significant improvements in their life. But the ordinary people who ensure that they got there, hardly do they see some of these changes. So I think that now the society is really changing and society is making a lot of demands. We expect our leaders to do a lot of things. So I'm thinking that we never know, maybe this time it's going to work.
Well, but then there's this school of thought also that says we should rather strengthen institutions like SHRAD and IOCO, other institutions that promote good governance and accountability, rather than this code of ethics.
So I think even strengthening those institutions are very important, like even the National Commission for Civic Education, SHRAD, all these governance institutions, the media, all these are very important. But I think that with the level of our development, it will take a while. Several years before we'll get the resources, we'll have that political commitment to ensure that these institutions are doing their job effectively. But over the years, one thing which is very clear is that people have used public office serving as ministers, political appointees, to enrich themselves. And this, we don't need people to tell us that this is what is happening. So I think that people, the leadership has realized that, no, this is a bane on Ghanaian politics, it's a bane on our development, it's a bane on our transformation. So why don't we get those in the inner circle, those who are ministers, those who are being paid some huge sums of money from the taxpayer, why don't we commit them to something? So I think this is a step in the right direction, and once we can get it done properly, although it's people can be skeptical about it, but I'm thinking that let's try this and let's see. And we should expect that the president, with the commitment in which the announcement was made, we expect that same commitment when it comes to the implementation. So people who are found wanting, I believe that actions must be taken so that it will send us a signal to all those who are coming to serve in public office that this is not an avenue for you to enrich yourself.
But why didn't we have this code of ethics all this while?
I believe that previously various administrations have done one thing or another to ensure that their ministers, their political appointees function in a particular way. But you know, we this is an incremental society. Changes are slightly. So I expect that maybe the president thought that time had come for this to be announced publicly to the Ghanaian people, for people to know that, no, in spite of the complaints of Ghanaians, in spite of the allegations of corruption and inefficiencies, there are certain mechanisms in place by the leadership to ensure that those who have been appointed, they function very well.
Well, Doc, what in your candid opinion should be the sanction against appointees who go against this code? Should they be sacked, suspended, or denied their salaries for a period of time, let's say 3 months, 4 months?
So I generally think that there are many competent Ghanaians out there who can function as ministers, who can function as deputy ministers. So this is not the time for us to waste our time on any particular individual. Once you are found having committed certain mistakes, certain errors, and they are clearly established that you willfully cause some of this errors, I think that you should be shown the exit from the government. Because when you look at it, there are many people whose qualifications, they are not that tremendous, their backgrounds, they don't really have special track record. So I think that there are many people out there, once people do not perform very well, as a leader, as a president, you should have the courage to show them the exit. And once you do that, it sends a signal, it tells all those who are serving that they have to be very careful. Because I think people should see it as a pride to serve as a minister, as a deputy minister in your country. So people shouldn't see that as an opportunity to enrich yourself, your family, etc. And once that understanding, once that signal is clearly sent to the various appointees, I know they are going to toe in line, they are going to do the right thing for the good people of Ghana.
Well, Doc, beyond the code of ethics, what must we do as civil society to ensure that public officials and government appointees become more accountable to the people?
I think one of the people must really have a lot of expectation. We must make a lot of demands. And even moving beyond that, we should rather set certain benchmarks that those who are leading, their lives are not supposed to be better than following. And we expect those who are leading to come up with the ideas to transform the society. So as we are giving them some, as far as Ghana standards is concerned, some good salaries, we should also expect that they also do certain things right. We should expect that they come up with certain transformations. We look at sanitation, we look at the problems with water, with electricity. As a society, we must also make a lot of demands. The problem, one of the problems with civil society, with all of us, with the media, is that our expectations of politicians are just, I would say, very low expectations. So once they're able to do construct some roles as if they have done the people a favor, but people should let them know that they have been appointed or they are in office at this particular time to bring transformation. So as long as the problems with water, with electricity, with quality healthcare, with quality education, as long as these problems are not addressed, then that means they have not really lived up to expectation. So the standards must really be very high. We must set very high standards for them.
All right, Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Dr. Bosman Sari is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana, Legon. And for more clarification on the code of ethics, we got through to the Deputy Minister of Information, Phyllis Fosu Kwate, but during the program, he told us he was not in a position to do it. It's behind the news. This text from Joe Banyet says, code of ethics is significant in the success of every institution in this country. It is therefore in the right direction for President Mahama to give an outline of principles as to how government officials go about their work. Many thanks, Joe, for your text messages. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Nina Isowa controlled the sounds, and Mercy Sowa was my summarizer. And my producers were Christopher Sidu, Edmond Tete Bryant Agama, and John Pobi. My name is Agatha Samuel. Many thanks for staying tuned.